Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here on the program once again Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician, and for some time now he's been stopping by every month on a Thursday to talk about children's health. We built it into the schedule because we figured that people would always have questions about children and their health, and if something's on your mind, it has to do with illness, wellness, development, behavior, anything that you could think of talking about with a pediatrician, you can call in here and talk with the doctor, and I know he'll do his best to give you some advice. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So, if you have questions, you can give us a call. Thanks for being here once again.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Well, we have an off-the-air question to start out with. We have a caller who says they have a 5-year-old with a minor anal fissure that is taking a long time to heal and would like to know how you would treat it. And I guess I'm not exactly sure myself what this is that we're talking about. So maybe you could say, well, what is this?
Anal fissure is a little crack in the skin at the anus. We think often it happens from too big, too hard to stool, a little bit of constipation. It comes out and it just kind of cracks the skin there. So I think the cause suggests the treatment. And I think what we want to do is we want to make sure that this child's stool stays soft with plenty of fluids, plenty of fiber, lots of vegetables and fruit and that sort of stuff. And I think maybe the other thing we want to do is we've talked about diaper rashes and how one of my feelings is that one of the reasons diaper rashes tend to persist is because we're too vigorous in keeping them clean. So every time the skin starts to heal, we take something and we wipe it off and we wipe the healing skin off too. And I think the same thing with anal fissures. Be gentle about cleansing the anal area after a bowel movement. Kind of dab it more than wipe it. You might want to use a medicated towelette like a Tux or something like that that's lubricated instead of dry toilet paper. I think it will heal a little bit faster that way. Anal fissures can present with pain. Oftentimes they're pretty much asymptomatic. They can present with pain. They can present with a little bit of blood streaking on the stool sometimes. Usually if you sort of benign neglect, we'll take care of them. But keep the stool soft. Keep the stool small and be gentle with cleansing, and I think that should heal up.
And so you think that if you're offering an appropriate diet with the right levels of fiber and that the child is getting plenty of liquids in the diet, that should be okay. You wouldn't think that stool softener or something in addition to that would be
I don't think any medication is necessary. And by fluids, again, we're talking especially in this case about non-milk fluids because, again, as we've talked about before, milk pours like a liquid, but it's more like a steak or something like that. It tends to cause a hard stool rather than a soft stool.
Water, juice. That kind of thing.
Healthy
non-milk liquids.
And I think, again, if you go with apple juice or some of those juices, they tend to keep the stool a little bit softer than maybe perhaps orange juice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, if you have questions for the doctor, you can call in and talk with him. It's the 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. And then we do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. On one of the recent programs, a caller called in and asked a question having to do with children and television watching, and that she had heard, and then subsequently I think I went on the web and went to their website of the American Academy of Pediatrics, that they were actually recommending that children under 2 not watch television at all. And that, I know you looked at the report and I looked at a little bit here, and the Academy really didn't say much about why. They just said it and then said, as I remember it, it said something like, well, I think we should do some further research or study or something like that. You know, if you really want to know about the potential effects, there's going to have to be more careful consideration. But the Academy did make that very pretty dramatic statement that says, for really young children, no television. And I think the caller was wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah. And I guess, I've heard tales of people who had daycare, left their child at daycare where the television was the daycare provider during the day. The daycare provider themselves, as best the parents knew, did very little except fix lunch and refereed fights and that sort of stuff. And mostly the kids were responsible for the TV, and the kids were supposed to have this symbiotic relationship together. And I think that's what the Academy is driving at, that there's no... I've not seen any studies, and the Academy didn't mention any studies, and I think that's what the Academy was saying. We don't know what TV watching will do to the immature human being, the under 2-year-old human being, how healthy it is or how unhealthy it is. And I think this extrapolates up to any age group, that I think the important thing the Academy feels, and I will certainly agree with this, is that human-to-human contact is important. Parent-child interaction, adult daycare provider and child interaction is important, and that human interaction is important. You know, I don't see anything wrong with the TV per se, or computers per se, or video games per se, as long as they're kept in perspective and, you know, the parents are watching and limiting the amount of time and watching. What I know at Christmas, there was a lot on TV about these rather violent video games that are adults only, but they're still being, the parents don't know what really is in that video game, so they're buying it. So I think what we're saying is, kids of all ages need human-to-human contact, parent-child contact, sibling contact, peer contact, and that this is probably important for good development. And
so it's not so, maybe not so much that TV watching in and of itself is bad, but it's that what is it that you were maybe not doing because the child is in front of the television?
Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, because, you know, the studies out on Sesame Street show that that really is beneficial for kids, that it helps. Barney, I can't stand, I mean, Barney drives a mature adult a little bit, but I think, again, you know, if you make yourself watch it, you say, this is a wholesome show, and it's probably, you know, it's probably quite attractive to the young audience, to the very young audience. And I think, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just how much. And I think, you know, our kids didn't ask to be born. They were sort of invited into the world by us. And I think we have then a responsibility to treat them as guests and to give them time and not necessarily hire somebody to take our job over. I will admit that, you know, daycare is necessary, but, you know, then there's the evenings. And I think so often we hire daycare workers during the day and we hire soccer coaches or basketball coaches or whatever coaches in the evening, and you just... there's all these people creeping in on our kids' time, or our family time, let's say, and I think we need to, you know, we brought these kids into the world. I think we need to continue to invest in them, and what's the return on our investment going to be? Well, you know, it's not measured at the bank. In fact, it's probably a negative at the bank, but I think the measure is the love returned and the pleasure of watching them grow and develop and turn into adult human beings. And I guess I'm particularly waxing on this now since I've got a daughter. My youngest daughter's getting married in 3 weeks, and just kind of reminiscing about her life and our life together. And
do you have grandchildren?
Not yet.
Not yet.
We won't go there.
Okay. Let's talk with someone in Chicago then on our line number 4. Hello. Hold on a second there.
Television.
Now we got you. Well, I'm sorry. Right at the beginning, we didn't have you up. Maybe you should start with where you started.
Right. I'm just interested again in the question of television. I started trying to figure out more too in the months that's passed, and I do remember seeing one study where they said children under 2 can't differentiate between commercials and statement programming or documentary programming, and so I'm wondering if the ultimate effect might be that these children don't have a good grasp of reality if they see TV too early. Perhaps, I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering if that's one of the effects, which to me seems like later on that leads to problems with schizophrenia, or if you've never been able to establish in your mind clearly what is reality and what's fantasy.
Yeah, and I think, yes, maybe, and I don't think there's any data yet, and I think what we're saying again is that the adult supervisor, the parent, the grandparent, the daycare provider needs to edit the TV our kids are watching. We certainly know that unedited TV or inappropriate shows do seem to lead to increased violence. We sure know, and the Surgeon General has declared obesity our number one enemy in this country, and we sure know that the amount of time kids spend watching TV directly relates to weight gain. I saw a study recently, I'm not sure what it's exactly to do with this, but kids who watch a lot of TV are down in their fruits and vegetables, probably because they're up in their candies and snack foods and that. There's a great number of good shows on TV. There's a great number of bad shows on TV, and I think what we're saying is parents, you need to be aware of what your kids are doing, and you need to be the editor of what they're watching, and you need to be available to discuss what they're watching if they want to discuss, you know, if they have questions about it or need to discuss it.
Yes. Well, thank you also for your earlier comments about adults' responsibility to children. I think your grandchildren will be very lucky.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Other questions are certainly welcome. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician. He's on the program once a month, always on a Thursday. And we created this show to give you this regular opportunity to talk about children's health. Whatever's on your mind can be kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews, anything that you could imagine talking about with a pediatrician. Well, you're certainly welcome to call in and talk with Dr. Bocek. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455.
Our governor is discussing a program where every child from birth to age 5 will get a free book once a month in the mail.
I don't know if it's once a month or once a year. Well, I don't know.
I think it's interesting, but you say, then there's got to be somebody to read that book to that child, and that's where I have other concerns and questions about that program that's been, but we need somebody. I don't think books are the limiting factor again. I think it's the interest of the parents that will sit down and read the book to them.
We have a caller here on a couple of other callers here. Someone on a cell phone, so we'll get them on line one. Hello.
Hi. I found it interesting the comment about the vegetables and fruits being down, and he suggested perhaps snacks being up, and that may be because of they're being bombarded with commercials promoting said snacks. Hello?
Yes. I don't know. I think commercials bombard us with prescription medications more than snacks. No, but you're right. Our commercials bombard us with all kinds of stuff we probably don't need. And isn't that what marketing, what advertising is all about? Convincing some people that they can't live without something they really don't need in the first place.
Yes. Well, thank you, and find the show interesting. Have a good day.
Well, thank you. Let us go on here. And our next caller is in Champaign on our line number 2. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question. I have an issue currently with my 2.5-year-old son.
Okay.
He is waking up in the middle of the night for 2 to 3 hours at a time.
Ooh.
And been doing it for about 2 weeks now. We're just looking for some ideas or suggestions on how to best cope with that and deal with that for ourselves and for him.
Okay. What time is he waking up?
In the morning.
No, what time is he waking
up
in the
night? Usually 2 to 3.
Okay, and he's up
till 4 to 5.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh. What do you do?
We keep him in his crib. We will, sometimes we'll go in and rub his back, play some soft music, try to get him relaxed to fall asleep, but he never really seems to want to.
Okay.
He's not crying. He's very happy, actually, about the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's just trying to get him...
How many naps a day does he take during the day?
One.
Okay. Most 2-year-old, 2.5-year-olds still take one. Yeah. You might try and take that nap away.
Okay.
That may be very difficult, but you might try and take that nap a day or convert it into a quiet time, read a book or something like that, and then go again. I think what you're doing is, you know, when they're awake, they're awake. When we're awake, we're awake. We turn on TV, we read a book, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A 2.5-year-old obviously can't read, and I wouldn't advise that, making that a reading time. And I think what you want to do with him when he wakes up at night is say, okay, I recognize that you're up at night. I can't make you go back to sleep again. I'm not thrilled about this whole situation, but I'm not going to punish you or anything like that because, yeah, that's not appropriate, but I'm not going to play with you.
Right.
I'm not going to interact with you. I'm going to supervise you to make sure you don't get in trouble, but I'm going to bore you to death.
Okay.
Basically, I'm sort of going to be here as a prison guard, but I am not going to be here as a playmate, as a librarian reader or anything like that. But I don't know why he's doing that.
I don't. Occasionally would be okay, but it has been every night for 10 to 14 days, and we're just trying to get through it, I guess, best we can.
Does a train go through at that time or anything like that?
Not
is there any noise
off and on. I mean, there's general neighborhood noise that we get from time to time,
yeah,
but not
nothing's going off then.
Not one thing that we can really pin it on. We've tried giving him a snack, thinking he's hungry. Not at 3 a.m., but right before he goes to bed. And, you know, just trying to eliminate items, and we were really quite stumped.
What time is he going to bed? Is he going
8, 9 o'clock.
Okay, that's not too early. That seems to be about appropriate. Yeah, I think mostly my best advice is bear with it.
Okay.
Supervise him when he's awake. But again, don't interact. Don't reward him for being awake.
Okay. Could we just leave him alone? He is still in a crib. He can't get up or out or anything.
Sure you can.
Okay.
See if he'll go. What does he do when he wakes up? Does he call for you?
Actually he doesn't. He sings.
Oh, he's just up. Oh, he's up singing.
He talks to himself. He counts
his
numbers. He does his letters.
Yeah, I'd shut the door and leave him there.
Okay.
Yeah, if he's not calling for you, I'd shut the door and leave him there, and hopefully he'll fall back to sleep again.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank
you.
Bye.
Back here to another caller on our line one in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I was just out visiting my newest granddaughter, who's now 2 months old, and learned something that I wish I had known when my kids were infants. And my daughter-in-law, when the baby fusses and is not consoled, you know, she is getting upset and nothing is consoling her. She's not dirty. She's not wet. She's not hungry. And, you know, holding her on your shoulder and so forth isn't helping. And she puts her down horizontally on the floor or some surface and then manipulates her legs a bit. And a lot of the time it calms the baby down and solves the fussiness problem. And I had never heard of that. So I just thought I would share it. I don't know what's
okay.
going on. Have you heard about this before?
No. But, I have heard of all kinds of strange things over my career, working for, you know, to get kids to sleep through the night, to get them to wake up in the morning, to get them to quiet down when they're fussing. And I think certainly, probably, it makes sense to put her on the floor, give her some wiggling room, and, you know, a little massage or a little range of motion type exercise. I think other people out there are welcome to try it. I sure can't see any harm in it. And in your daughter's case, it's working very well.
The other thing I hadn't realized as a young mother was how much what you eat might affect the baby's fussiness. My daughter-in-law seems to pay close attention to this, and so, for instance, she can't drink milk herself at this point and has to get calcium and vitamin D some other way because it upsets the baby's stomach, and I was totally oblivious to that as
okay.
a young mother. So I don't know whether things have changed or whether I just have a very smart daughter-in-law or what the deal is.
No, I think many, many breastfeeding mothers find out that there's something they can't eat while they're breastfeeding because baby doesn't seem to like it. I think with our youngest, if my wife had onions as opposed to onions as a little seasoning in the dish, if she had a dish that had onions in it, Lisa objected to that. And I think many, many women find out that, you know, I need to leave something out of my diet because the baby seems to be a little happier. unfortunately, I can't help you. I can't give you a list of the top 10 or anything like that because it just seems to vary all over the place. But oftentimes, yeah. And I think what usually the pattern will come, you know, we had some dish, and boy, I had a long night with the baby. And then the next few nights went fine, and then we had a similar dish again for dinner, and boy, that night was long again. And that's the way I'll pick out what, yeah, that's the way it dawns on me that, hey, every time I have a dish heavy in onions or heavy in dairy products or something like that, I pay for it. We have a long night.
Well, I don't want to discourage anybody from breastfeeding.
Absolutely not.
I certainly thought it was very convenient, and my daughter-in-law says she's lost 5 pounds since the baby was born just from breastfeeding. So.
Yeah, breastfeeding's kind of lazy in a way, isn't it? I mean, the milk's always there. The milk's always warm.
Yeah, you don't have to. You're not caught without a bottle.
Yeah, so it's sort of lazy in a way, or it's very convenient in a way. And I think the other thing, our society's making breastfeeding much more convenient by putting, you know, breastfeeding areas in some of the department stores and that sort of thing. And certainly, all right, let me go on record as saying, you know, formula-fed babies do well. But certainly, I think it's also frequently said cow's milk was made for baby cows, human milk was made for human babies, and what have they done with formulas? They've tried to take the cow's milk apart and imitate, alter it, and make it as close to breast milk as possible, but they can't get there.
Well, they're finding all kinds of things that breast milk protects against in terms of wise for kids. So anyway, thanks a bunch.
All right.
Thank you.
I think that is an important point for people to understand, that in addition to its nutritional value, there's other stuff in breast milk that is beneficial, that it's a good thing for a baby to have. So it's not just that we're feeding the baby, it's also that we're passing along things like various
antibodies and
immunity stuff like that.
Yeah. But again, for you women who just really don't want to breastfeed for whatever reason, or the breastfeeding doesn't work, and occasionally that happens, I don't think there's any evidence that I'm aware of out there that shows that the formula-fed baby comes out, you know, at age 21 behind the eight ball in intelligence or health or anything like that. So I think the formula companies have done a good job. But there are there are things in breast milk that we still don't understand yet why they're there, but we do know that, there are antibodies in breast milk, there are nonspecific infection-fighting proteins in the breast milk, and it just seems to be, well, if you compare all kinds of mammalian breast milk, they're all different because for each species, they seem to be a little bit different. Like, I think it's seals have a very, very high fat content in their milk, and they nurse their babies only once a day. So, you know, the milk is altered by the species to serve the way that particular species works, and that's why we say human milk is the best for human babies.
Okay, we're at the midpoint here with our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. He is here monthly on a Thursday. We talk about children's health, and if you have questions, please do call us, 333-9455, that's for Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, I guess we got some good health news. Just the other day, I was hearing that public health officials here in the state have saying that the flu has peaked. That does not mean now that you can't still get it. For several months now, there'd be the possibility of getting the flu, but it seems to be that they're saying that the worst is over, and I think that's probably good news, since because it wasn't all that long ago that suddenly there seemed to be a very high level of concern. There were some places, in fact, where some children had died. I think this was out in the West.
Yes.
Where some children had died. And there was a lot of concern about the possibility that we could have a worse than usual year. And then that, of course, sent a lot of people out who had not gotten flu shots, had sent a lot of people to the clinics and their doctors looking for the flu vaccine. And then there wasn't enough vaccine. So we kind of had a situation. But at the least, it seems that the worst part of we're past what should be the worst part of the flu season now.
Yeah, I think the remarkable or the unusual thing about this flu season is it probably started About a month earlier than average. It started and peaked about a month earlier than average. And it appears that the vaccine this year may not be as effective as we would have liked it to be. I guess the wrong strains. You know, it happens. And but it sounds like it, yeah, we're over it, or we're getting past it. And I know the media's been saying it lasts through April. Well,
you don't think
generally,
that's really...
usually it's a January, February phenomenon, and and I think since it came early, it's probably December, January phenomenon, and we'll probably leave it a little bit early too. And we're just paying. You know, this is not particularly unique. We've been dealing with influenza for millennia, probably.
Yeah. Well, I remember back in the fall when Jeff Swearingen was here. One day, he's our family practice guy from over at Carl. He talked about the fact that for this fall, Carl had ordered more doses of vaccine than they had the previous year. I don't remember what he said. It seemed like it was a significant number more, like 10,000 doses more. You know, it was a lot. And there still seemed to be, at least around the country, a shortage. And I think even here we got to the point where there were more people who were wanting it. So you think that then next year are they going to order more and then find out that they have too much and end up having to send it back?
Yeah, I expect next year. I expect statistically, since this was a bad flu season, next year will probably not be as bad a flu season. But still, when Dr. Swearingen and I tell you in October, it's time to think about getting your flu shot, please do it then. And I think what happened is the demand, because of the publicity this got, the demand just got much higher than usual. Mm-hmm. And if I were running a drug company, and again, I'm not a big fan of pharmaceutical companies at the moment, but, your object is to make a profit. And if you can sell 2 million doses of this stuff, that's what you want to make, 2 million doses. You don't want to make 3 million doses, because that other million doses you're going to have to throw away, because it's not going to be adequate for next year. And I think what happened is, yeah, the demand was probably much higher this year, and the manufacturers just got behind.
Yeah. Let's talk with some more folks here. The next is in Champaign and on line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I wanted to thank the doctor for contributing his time to this show, and I appreciate his advice. I did want to clarify, though, that breastfeeding is one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Okay.
And I considered myself lazy or taking a break when I did a bottle instead of breastfeeding.
Okay.
Because it's just a very difficult thing, and breastfeeding babies have to eat more often.
Yes.
And you have tender breasts, and I found it one of the most difficult things I've ever done. And I'm proud that I did it, and I'm glad that I did it, but I was kind of surprised by your comment about it being lazy, because I was like, I felt lazy when I was fixing a bottle.
Yeah.
Because it was so much easier just to feed her a bottle and take a break from breastfeeding than
yes.
breastfeed.
Yeah, there certainly is a price and a sacrifice for breastfeeding. It's particularly in the beginning, the first few weeks, it can be quite painful. The first couple weeks, it's going to be probably, I'll virtually guarantee it's going to be painful. And then that goes away. They do feed more often. Probably a formula-fed baby feeds every 3.5 to 4 hours, where a breastfed baby probably feeds on average every 2.5, 3
right.
hours if you're lucky.
And then you have a growth spurt at 6 weeks
yeah.
and that type of thing. So.
And then you've got to eat more, because breast milk isn't free. You've got to put in the calories, because you're putting out the calories in the breast milk.
It is hard work.
It is work. Well, there's costs and there's benefits to
sure.
it.
Well, I'm glad I did it. I just one of the harder tasks that I've accomplished.
Okay.
So, thank you.
How long did it take you to establish to relax and feel quite comfortable breastfeeding?
I remember my milk came down and that was painful.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I think around 3 weeks I still had really tender breasts, and then it started to be easier.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, at 6 weeks she had a growth spurt, and we were up every. We started nursing at 2 hours, So, you know, the nursing might take 30. It was probably 3 months before she started doing it much faster.
Yes.
Or 2 months. So, you know, we'd spend 40 minutes nursing, and then an hour and 20 minutes later, we'd start again. So, and she was little, so she, you know, needed to nurse frequently, but...
Was she premature?
No, not at all.
Okay, just a tiny
right
baby.
On time. She just was 5 pounds, 11 ounces.
Okay.
So, I think I had a very normal nursing experience from the reading that I've done. It was challenging.
Yes.
So, and I think a lot of women... if you don't receive the right kind of support, it's very easy to give up. And most women, from what I've read, don't last beyond, I did 5 months, and getting to a year is difficult. So
yeah, I think statistics show that the average nursing mother doesn't make it past about 12 weeks.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Well, sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I actually had that thought. I thought, you know, there are going to be women out there listening to guys talking about how wonderful and easy breastfeeding is and thinking, well, you guys don't really know. And also I was thinking about the fact that we sort of talk about it as if it's such an easy deal. You offer the breast to the baby latches on, and everything's swell, and it's not that easy. And I found myself wondering about whether women really do get the good support. They have somebody to ask questions. If something's not going right, who do they go to say, no, look, this is what this experience that I'm having, and I'm having a lot of discomfort. Baby doesn't seem all that happy. I'm wondering, is the baby actually getting adequate nourishment and, you know, all that kind of stuff, whether it is easy and possible for women who want to do it and are having some difficulties to find some place to say, hey, I'm having this problem. It's not going all that well. What do I do about this?
Yeah, and I think most places now do, most hospitals, a lot of clinics offer lactation consultants who are usually RNs who have gone through extra training, and they really are well trained in nursing and helping the mother establish nursing and helping work out little kinks if things aren't going right. Actually, husbands do love breastfeeding, don't we? Because guess who can't help in the middle of the night? Yeah. But yeah, there are lactation specialists in a lot of hospitals, a lot of clinics that can help out where it's not going right. And often with the first baby, particularly with the first baby, boy, you're an inexperienced mother. You're anxious. You're afraid. The last third of pregnancy has not been comfortable. You haven't slept well. You have the baby, and certainly labor and delivery is not the most comfortable experience. And then the baby comes home, and it's just, you know, the babies are awfully demanding. They're wanting to feed every 2 to 3 hours or so. And like she said, it takes 20 to 30 minutes per feeding. So, bam.
You're spending
hour and a
half, awful lot
2 hours
of time
later,
doing
you're
that,
you're back nursing. Yeah. It is, and when I say lazy, I'm somewhat facetious in that it's there and it's ready. But yeah, the first 8 to 12 weeks are certainly a kind of a funny time where the babies aren't as predictable. And I guess the other thing about the first 6 to 8 weeks or so is babies seem to be nocturnal, so they feed more frequently at night, tend to sleep better during the day when you want to go to sleep during the day. And postpartum depression, ladies, you deserve it. You deserve to feel a little bit blue, a little bit down. I'm not demeaning that, but I think it's perfectly justifiable. You've been through a 9-month pregnancy, you've been through labor and delivery, and last trimester you didn't get much sleep, and guess what, the first trimester baby's born, you're not gonna get much sleep either.
Okay. We have some other callers here. Next would be, let's see, Urbana Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not calling about breastfeeding, but my breastfeeding story would be that after my first pregnancy, or during labor, I had group B strep, and I was put on antibiotics during the labor, and I got a yeast infection on my nipples.
Okay.
And it was not diagnosed. It took 5 weeks and 5 ointments before it was finally treated. And I was lucky enough to be breastfeeding an adopted baby at the same time as I was breastfeeding our newborn. The adopted baby was also newborn.
Okay.
And so that was extremely painful because it was always hurt more at night. And so my advice would be, if you are on antibiotics for group B strep during labor, watch out for those yeast infections, because my obstetrician didn't say anything. He didn't even know how to treat it. When the lactation consultant finally figured out what my problem was, I thought the babies were latching on wrong, and that wasn't it. Anyhow, what I am calling about, though, I have a six-year-old who literally, I don't know if I've talked to you about him before, but he literally gets sick every 2 months. He gets high fevers, he gets bad headaches, he gets a little bit of a sore throat, he complains of a stiff neck. It's nothing like nuchal rigidity,
okay,
but just, you know.
Nuchal rigidity, yeah, we're talking about the possibility of meningitis.
Yeah,
here.
It's nothing like that.
Yeah.
And then
just a muscle achy neck.
Right, and
yeah.
Then he gets better after 5 to 7 days. And the fevers can be, the highest he's ever had has been 104.5, but usually they're 102.5, 103, 103.5. And between these episodes, he is healthy. He is growing. He's eating well. He's busy. He's singing. And I don't often take him to the doctor when it happens because I happen to be a nurse and I could tell when he's getting dehydrated and I know how to take care of him. Occasionally, if his throat is really sore, we go in, they do a throat culture, and it's negative. Now, my mother-in-law, the neighbors, the church folks, everybody, my husband's secretary, everybody says, there's something wrong with that kid. Well, I tend to say there's nothing wrong with that kid. He just happens to get every bug that comes by. Yeah. Do you agree?
I would guess that you're probably right. Does he get any sores in his mouth?
Well, actually, this time he does have a sore in his mouth. Usually he doesn't, but
usually
he's got a white pustule on the inside of one cheek.
Okay, the only reason there's cyclic neutropenia where the... We don't. I think this is a hereditary disease. I can't remember for sure, but what happens in cyclic neutropenia is on a regular cycle, usually every 30 days, the white blood cell count just goes down, and these kids tend to be sick for about 3 or 4 days at that time, as I remember. They usually get sores in their mouth, they get fevers and that sort of thing. And so this thing will cycle every month or so.
Okay.
And what you might want to do is you might want to note these illnesses on a calendar and see if they're really, you know, what their regularity really, really is. I guess my other question is this year round, or is this the 6 months of winter that he's sick? How does he do from May through September, October?
I'm not positive, but I don't think he is as sick during those months.
Yeah, I think I'm with you then. I think he's a perfectly normal child who's just, yeah, every month or two during the winter, mm-hmm. something comes along.
And it's always the same. It's always the high fever, the stiff neck, a little bit of a sore throat.
Yeah.
And often no cold, no runny nose, no coughing, no sore ears, just flat out fever and headache.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's, and I. The other thing, I presume he's never been hospitalized.
That's right.
And he's growing and developing just fine.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. He's probably a perfectly normal, healthy child who's just doing what young children do during that time of year.
Okay. The 4 months ago when he was sick, I actually took him into Amy Dunlop, and at that point he'd been sick for 4 days. And I was kind of begging with her. I was saying, do you realize this happens every 2 months? And she said, if he's still sick tomorrow, bring him in and we'll work him up. Now, what was she going to... And then he had turned the corner by pretty much that day. What...
She was probably hoping that he'd get well and she wouldn't have to do anything. but probably what she'd start with is a CBC, a complete blood count.
Analysis, yeah. Okay. Very good. Now, for the cyclical neutropenia, is there anything they would do for that?
Actually, they can use granulocyte stimulating hormone, and it can be treated now.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We have about 10 minutes, a little bit less, perhaps, in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician and is with us Each month on a Thursday, we talk about children's health. And your questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to put my 2 cents in on the breastfeeding topic.
Oh, okay.
I've nursed 4 children. My fourth one now is 11 months old, and I've nursed all of them for over a year. Well, not him over a year yet. But I also wanted to mention that there also is a La Leche League chapter in town.
Thank you.
And that mother-to-mother support is also very important.
Yes.
Especially at those difficult early weeks. But I found it to be the most wonderful experience, and I think it's very convenient to always have a snack ready for them wherever I am. I don't have to worry about taking things along and that kind of thing.
So you will agree that it's a little bit lazy to a certain extent.
I think so. I'm really glad I didn't ever have to do any of all those bottles and spend all the money on formula.
Can you remember your breastfeeding experience with your first one compared to your second, third, and fourth one?
Well, I guess I was always more nervous about him.
Yeah.
But I think I would have been that way with the bottles, too.
Yeah. Actually, there's been studies about the cost of breastfeeding versus the cost of formula feeding, and they're about the same.
No, really?
Because, again, if you're putting out 1,000 calories of breast milk,
uh-huh.
You need to take 1,000 calories of additional food in, plus I think the figure's thrown in of 10% extra because it costs your body some calories to manufacture the breast milk. Mm-hmm. So I think that cost gets hidden. You know, it's not, you go to the grocery store, you buy a case of formula, say, oh my gosh, this is, you know, $60 or whatever a case. It just kind of gets hidden into your grocery bill. But breastfeeding is not free.
It's still better for the baby, though.
It's still better for the baby, yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And again to Urbana, line number 1. Hello.
Good morning. Not to go on and on about breastfeeding, but I'm also a nursing mother, and I had a lot of difficulties, especially the first 2 to 3 months. And I just wanted to mention how women can get a hold of or get information about the local La Leche League chapter. There's a website on prairienet.org. If you go there and click on Prairie Links and then Health and Wellness and then Women's Health, then you can get to the local homepage, which has a phone number of a local La Leche League leader that women can call and talk to about questions. You don't even have to be a member. I called this woman several times the first few weeks before I'd even been to a meeting, and she was very helpful. And another local resource, as Dr. Bocek mentioned, there are a lot of hospitals that do have lactation consultants. And at Carle Hospital, there's a breastfeeding clinic that anybody can go to. I delivered at Provena, but I also went to the Carle Breastfeeding Clinic and met with lactation consultants several times over the first few weeks. You can go in and have your baby weighed anytime you want. Then you can make sure that the baby's getting enough to eat, which is one of the concerns that a lot of nursing mothers have. And they're also very helpful with all kinds of issues that come up, such as yeast infections or mastitis or improper latch-on or any of the numerous reasons that women do end up often quitting breastfeeding early on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Very good. Thank you for the call. Let's continue to another caller here, Urbana line number 2. Hello.
Hi. I'm just calling in regard to what Dr. Bocek said about eating 1,000 calories extra per day when you're breastfeeding. And I would just like to say that I breastfed 3 babies, each one of them anywhere between 9 and 10 months and about 13 months. And I'm pretty well sure that I kept my diet fairly normal to the way it was before, and although I retained a little bit of extra weight until I stopped breastfeeding those babies, if I would have eaten 1,000 calories more every day, I would have been a blimp.
No, you wouldn't, because you're putting out...
Well, I sure didn't lose any weight while I was breastfeeding.
Okay, yeah, you did fine. But you will, yeah, you're putting out calories in breast milk. And breast milk is about 20 calories per ounce on average. Babies taking 2.5 to 3 ounces per pound of body weight per day. So multiply that out, and you are putting out calories. And I noticed when my wife was breastfeeding, she eat as much as I did. And because otherwise, if you don't consume the calories that you're putting out in breast milk, you are going to lose weight. And again, most women don't, because their appetite will just naturally take care of the extra calories they need to manufacture the breast milk. And I'm glad you brought up the other point. Breastfeeding does cost you weight. Your weight is up about 10% over your bare body weight, and that has to do with increased breast size and increased total body water while you're nursing. So for you nursing mothers out there who want to get down to your pre-pregnancy weight, you will, as soon as you quit nursing, very shortly you'll get down to your pre-pregnancy weight.
I agree. You have to be patient with it.
Yeah.
It will come off when you're done.
And if you try to get down to your pre-pregnancy weight while you're nursing, probably the breast milk will stop. So, a little bit of extra weight, well distributed, not fat, you will retain as long as you're nursing, and as soon as you stop nursing, it'll go away.
Okay, well, I still don't think I was eating an extra 1,000 calories a day.
Yeah, and I'd just grab that number out of the air. I'd have to put pencil to paper and figure out.
At 5 feet tall in a small frame, 1,000 calories extra a day on me.
Yeah, because you're taking probably about 1,500 calories in, and I'd have to put pencil to paper and figure out how many ounces of breast milk a baby's likely taking in per day per weight.
In any case, I think the bottom line is it can't possibly be more expensive to breastfeed your baby than it is to buy bottles and formula.
This study was years ago, and formula prices have gone up. But the other thing is, it depends what you're living on. If you eat a lot of filet mignon, it can be expensive. So it depends what you're living on, but it will. Breastfeeding is not free, because the mother has to consume more calories because she's putting calories out in breast milk. So there is a cost to breastfeeding. The nice thing about that cost is it's not in one big lump sum for, like a case of formula is, so it tends to get lost.
Okay, well, good luck to the breastfeeding mothers.
Yes, right, absolutely.
Thanks.
We have, maybe about 5 minutes left. If you want to give us a call, 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Just one thing that sort of occurs to me, it's sort of Dr. Troopin territory, but I just think it's probably worth mentioning. I think there are people that still think that when you are breastfeeding, you get pregnant. This is not true.
No. When you're breastfeeding, there's a relative protection. Some women will be completely anovulatory. They will have no periods. Other will have irregular periods. Some will even conceive, I understand, when they aren't having periods. It's not guaranteed.
That's not guaranteed.
It's not guaranteed. So I think, some family planning hasn't evolved into the human species. If you are breastfeeding, it will. And since probably women breastfed once upon a time for 2 to 3 years, so there was some family planning that occurred in the species, but it's not a guaranteed breastfeeding is not a guaranteed contraceptive.
Keep that
don't out. Rely on it.
We have a couple minutes left. I don't know if there's anything in particular, any other things that you'd like to talk about or mention.
You know, let me just pick up where the governor is alluding to. Invest in your children. That is, invest your time as parents. Read to your children, and I think there is ample evidence that the sooner you start reading, or the babies enjoy it. And I think in Georgia they have a program where they're encouraging mothers to read to their babies when they're still in the uterus or womb. And so read to your kids. It's good for them. It's good for you. That's laziness too, I guess, in a way. Read to your kids because it gives you a good reason to sit down, put your feet up, and enjoy your child. And have you hugged your kid today? It gives you a good reason, good time to do that. And it's good for their development. It's good for you. It's good for your relationship with them. And yeah. Reading is fun.
Okay. Anything else that's now, we're here, we're still in winter, so I don't know if there's a whole lot of outdoor activity going on. I suppose if we do get these nice days here and there, the kids are going to want to be outside. And
it's still flu season. Yeah, and it's flu season. It's still viral infection season. So again, wrap them up so they don't get cold. But I think, again, what the most important thing to keep from getting sick is wash your hands. And, yeah, don't wipe your nose on your hands and shake somebody's hand. Wash your hands. Use Kleenex. Dispose of them properly. Cover your mouth when you cough. Then after you do that, wash your hands because they're full of cough germs.
And try to convince the kids to do that.
That's right.
Well, we don't know what they will, when they're out of your sight, what they're up to. But at least try to communicate that to them. All right. Well, I thank you very much, as always, for giving us your time.
It's my pleasure.
Dr. Robert Bocek, he's here with us each month, always on a Thursday. We talk about children's health.